Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of The Morning Show with hosts Phil Huff and my co-host Julie Calamine. Good morning, Julie.
Good morning, Phil. How are you?
I can't believe it's August already.
And getting hot. My goodness.
Yeah, it's going to be a hot one. We're going to get to the weather in a moment, but the haze is, I think, the thing that signifies, yeah, it's August.
Yes, and Phil, I went to one of my semi-secret huckleberry picking spots a few days ago, and guess what? I got turned back by a firefighter.
Oh.
So.
Well, now we know where you're going.
I guess so. That one's out of the bag.
Did you see any berries? Did you get very far in?
No.
It's been kind of hit and miss, according to reports I've had.
Seems so. I've been to Schweitzer and not had a great success there. I think I'm behind the other pickers in that area. Yeah.
Well, we'll see. Hopefully there's a decent crop for the bears and for the human-bear interactions this fall.
But I know. I was thinking about the bears. What are the bears going to eat if we don't have enough huckleberries?
Leaves, twigs and leaves.
Hopefully.
We spent the weekend getting ready to go to your home state next week of Minnesota.
I've heard this. I'm excited that you're going there, Phil.
Yeah, putting some boats together and making sure we got all the parts and gear in working order, and we're going to take off next week and go paddling for 3 weeks. So you'll be solo, or you'll be with someone else anyway.
I'll figure it out. But Boundary Waters Canoe Area, what a great area to get to.
Yeah,
I'm excited for you, too.
We'll have to talk fishing later.
That's it.
Well, turning to the weather, today I think the forecast simply says haze. I can't tell if it's going to rain or not because of the haze. But it is supposed to hit a high of 90 degrees. And it gets hotter from here. Tonight it dips to 52. Tomorrow, 95. Thursday, it's saying 99, although I heard on the TV forecast last night it was going to break 100.
Yes.
Anyway, hot. Extreme health warning because of the haze and the heat for Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So be careful if you go outside.
We will do so. And really, hot weather makes us think about staying in and thinking about other things, which leads us to our guests this morning who are thinking about things other than just hot weather. We're being joined this morning by the National Alliance on Mental Illness, Far North. It's called NAMI. And our guests are Ellie Lazotte. Good morning, Ellie.
Good morning.
And Catherine, is it Peruse?
Peruse.
Very good. And your titles, Ellie, you are president of the association.
Yes, I am.
And Catherine, we understand you are couple of things. You're the treasurer and you're the clinical director.
The clinical director for North Idaho Crisis Services.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very
good.
Yeah,
very important part of the mission of the organization.
That's right.
Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
We've had folks on from NAMI in the past, but it's been a while and we always have new listeners. So why don't you start by giving us an overview of the organization, what it's about and does?
Well, we're an affiliate of the National NAMI organization, and because of that, we share their mission, their values, and the policy. We follow their steps. Mm-hmm. And
NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness.
Yes.
Okay.
National Alliance on Mental Illness. It is the largest grassroots organization that is devoted to improve the lives of people with mental illness and their families and friends through education, through support and advocacy. So that's what we do that here in locally.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And is there do you have a stated mission from NAMI, or is that more or less the mission?
That's the mission.
That's the mission, is mm-hmm. to support individuals and their families mm-hmm. who are impacted by mental illness. As a local affiliate, we work with our state affiliate as well as the national organization to work with legislators to make changes in laws, to provide services, to ensure that there are not legal things that would cause more problems for families, such as accessing medication.
So tell us about how the local chapter got started.
Oh, Catherine would have to take that one.
It was started by four individuals, 2007, Doug and Ruth McKnight and Neil and Ann Wimberly. because of their personal experiences with family members with mental illness. And I got involved about a year after that because of my own family history with mental illness. And we kind of have moved forward there in raising awareness. We're always working to reduce stigma, raise money, and to enhance services for families and individuals.
Mm-hmm. I remember at the time, and you know, full disclosure, I know the Wimberleys very well, that one of the driving factors was the distance they had to drive to get support services just for the families.
It continues to be an issue up here in northern Idaho. Mm-hmm. We have one practicing psychiatrist who is full. We have two nurse practitioners in town for prescribing medications, which has been wonderful to have that increase. But we continue to struggle with long delays to get in to get assessments or evaluations to begin medication. And if you don't have insurance, then you're really in trouble.
Those are the patient, if you will, programs, but also a lot of the work of the organization focuses on the lives of the families involved, too.
Correct. We have educational programs. One's called Family to Family, which works with families to understand mental illness, to provide kind of hands-on ideas from other families who've dealt with it, and just to educate. We have our peer-supported groups and education programs where peers are trained and they work together to support each other.
I just want to say that I have a personal, a couple of years ago with our program, Family to Family, I was requested and to take the class that would help me with my personal connection that I was having in my family, and it helped me tremendously. I think the main thing that I took away from it is knowledge and insight and empowerment, and also I took away the feeling that I wasn't alone, and sharing stories are very powerful. To share your story with others, it was just powerful for me to know that others were dealing with similar situations, and we helped each other.
Yeah, it sounds like personal connection is very important, but let's back up just for a moment and talk a little bit more about mental health care in North Idaho. It sounds like we're definitely short on professionals, practitioners who can help folks, but how does our population compare, say, to the rest of the state or the rest of the nation? Are we an area in great need, or are we just like everybody else?
No, there's a great need. We're listed as a rural or frontier area. There's a shortage of mental health professionals of all types in the northern, particularly the northern part of the state. We're not the only counties in Idaho. There are other counties that have equal issues. But when you're rural, it's difficult because, you know, if you spend a fortune on an education, you want to go somewhere like Seattle where you can make six figures and more. You're not going to make that in North Idaho.
Yeah, so we've got a shortage of professionals who can help people, and then people have a difficult time getting in to get help. We're a long way. We're all a long way from everywhere.
Mm-hmm. No, yes. Absolutely. And then we have a fairly high population that does not have any kind of insurance coverage, and that the gap is there for people in our state in particular is dramatic and causing great difficulties.
So we're going to move on to programs that you are offering through NAMI, but we found out a little bit about Catherine, how you came to be at NAMI, but Ellie, how did you come to join NAMI?
It was through Ann Wimberly.
Also.
Yes, the connection there with her. And so I feel a connection to now stay on to spread the word about how we should replace the stigma on mental illness. It was interesting. In 2016, we went to the city council, I think it was in May, because in May is Mental Health Awareness Month. And we went there, and we had the mayor, Shelby Rongstad. He declared for Sandpoint the month of May to be Mental Health Awareness Month. And if you go on the national site, they have a pledge that you can take to replace the stigma on mental illness. And the whole council and the mayor had taken the pledge that night. So we felt that it was, it's just important to spread awareness throughout the community.
So in addition to spreading awareness, which is extremely important to set the baseline for all of the programs, tell us about how you're working to fill some of those gaps that are created by being in a rural area.
Well, NAMI Far North was instrumental in beginning the crisis, North Idaho Crisis Services, which is based here out of Bonner County. It is an after-hours crisis service phone line that is staffed by licensed mental health clinicians. It was actually Ann and I were looking around the community, and everyone was saying, we don't have any services, what do we do? And this seemed like something that could bring in an additional support for people at a time after hours. You're very limited in Bonner County. You can call pretty much law enforcement if you have something. In addition, our hope is that we will impact people upstream from a crisis, so that they don't have to wait until it's the point where there's law enforcement. They can get help, support, referrals, supportive listening, all those things before it becomes a crisis that requires law enforcement. So we have been, North Idaho Crisis Services has been providing that service for a little over 2.5 years in our county.
And how's that going?
As far as calls go, We do a fair amount of calls, about 150 to 180 a year. It does cost money. Right now, we're at a point where we're very, very low on funds, and the crisis line after hours is in jeopardy of being discontinued this fall due to lack of funding, which is one of the reasons we are having the fundraising dinner NAMI Far North is.
Mm.
Yes.
We want to get to the details of that, but since you've brought it up, tell us at least the top line. When and what is it?
You explain it.
Well, again, it goes back to Ann Wimberly. And she and I live in Hope, and so we travel to the meetings, the board meetings together. And one day in the car, we were talking about fundraisers, and we would love to have a fundraiser that there's so many nonprofits in Sandpoint. We wanted something different and unique. And she brought up the fact that she had gone to a farm to dinner party at Emily Levine's Red Wheelbarrow Farms and out in Selly. And so we thought, wow, that'd be a great idea because no one has done this before. So she contacted Emily, and Emily said, sure, that's a go. And so that's how we came about doing involving Emily. We have Peter Tobin, who is the gourmet chef that will be there, creating a dinner supplied by local farmers. A lot of Emily's produce will be there. We'll be right smack into the garden. We will be sitting in between her rows of beautiful produce.
And Peter Tobin, I'm assuming I should know his name, but is he a chef in the area, or is he?
Well, you know what? He, Emily knew him, and locally he, is up at Schweitzer, I think, during the winter, but right now he is, instructing a culinary class in Spokane. And so, That's what he's doing for the summer. So I think he's going to bring some of his chefs that he is instructing to come help too.
So do the people come in and they go pick their own salad lettuce and create a salad? Or
no, I think it'll be all picked.
Yeah, this is going to be a multi-course gourmet meal. Yes. It's beautiful. And then we are having wine provided by Pondere Winery.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this will be a nice combination.
The dates and information for people who want to participate.
The date is August 25th. Mm-hmm. We have seating for 80. We are really close to capacity. So if you are interested, you should buy them quickly. You can go online to Eventbrite. And just type in farm to table dinner Sandpoint, and it'll bring up all the information that you need. And we'd love to have you there. It's going to be a great, great function. Yeah.
Eventbrite. And could they also go to your website, NAMI Far North, and get there? Or
yes, there's a link on the website.
Yes, very good.
And also Facebook.
Yeah, there's always Facebook these days,
isn't there? Facebook.
So amongst the many programs that support you, mentioned law enforcement, and I know one of the programs that was fairly early on was the Crisis and Training Program.
Yes.
Tell us a little
CIT,
bit about that.
Which is Crisis Intervention Training. Its main focus is helping to educate law enforcement on mental illness, the type of things to look for that would give them a clue that there might be a mental illness impacting this person's behavior. And some of the best ways to handle it so that they're able to do their job. Bonner County Sheriff's was instrumental in the implementation and beginning this program in Idaho as a whole. And then it has spread throughout the state and continues on in various forms in the different counties.
That's a bit of a feather in our cap or a not the most populous county, and I would have thought it would have been somewhere down around Boise, but we've been
it was not.
Ahead of it.
It's the rural county need.
Right.
Yes. And
a number of law enforcement people have been through from various departments, right?
Yes. Sandpoint Police, State Patrol. We even have done some dispatch people. And this program has continued on, primarily done by the law enforcement themselves. Which is as it should be. We just wanted to bring this to law enforcement, get it going, and then have them continue it on a long-term basis, which they have done throughout the state.
It seems to be so obvious after the fact, but when I first heard about the program, it's like, yeah, what a great idea, because the training of the frontline responders seems to be very significant in terms of handling any crisis.
Absolutely.
And so they're prepared with the resources to where to direct people and how to handle the situation. And
absolutely.
I'm curious, if a person has gotten to the point where they're calling the sheriff and they're having a mental health crisis, is it still possible for them to call your hotline, or is it usually past that point?
I've actually had law enforcement call us and say, you know, what can you do? You have referrals? When it's not necessary for law enforcement to physically get involved, but they've been contacted or someone has gone up there, and then we work in collaboration with law enforcement to assist the individual.
Sure.
So in addition to the programs we've talked about already, there's a series of ongoing monthly meetings for the organization?
Right, there are. Our monthly meeting is the third Wednesday of the month. It is held at the Bonner County Hospital in the classrooms. And it's open to the public. It's at 5:30. It's to support those with mental illness and also the families that care for them and love them and friends. We have guest speakers, and they speak on
a wide array of things. This month we have mindfulness,
right?
Is what, and then after about an hour presentation, then we break into two different support groups: one for individuals living with mental illness, and one for family members.
And all that's, you know, when we share, everything stays there. within the group, and it's a safe environment to come and share and get support.
It sounds very supportive and nurturing.
Yes, it does. It actually sounds like a program that would be good for almost anyone to attend. And as you know, Phil and I talk about the outdoors so often, and we've had a number of groups with folks that are educational and our groups that work on getting adolescents and sometimes troubled adolescents into the outdoors. And they seem to, they truly believe, and there's research that supports it, that experience in the outdoors is helpful for youngsters and all of us. And I'm just wondering, does that enter, does experience in the outdoors enter into your teachings or your classes about the mentally ill? Is that an element for you? Do you think about that?
Well, getting out exercise is good for everybody. Mm-hmm. We do try to plan at least one event each year that's like a walk, a nature walk type of thing for interaction and getting out. But not, we don't have a specific program that focuses on outdoor events. It's more what each of us enjoys.
Well, maybe something to think about. It really takes me out of my head when I get outdoors.
Right.
Well, I know in the past there have been, May is usually Mental Health Awareness Month.
Yes.
Right.
I know there have been times when we've helped to organize hikes for folks in association with that. Highlighting the benefits as well as the need in the community for interactive programming.
Yes. Absolutely. We've had some wonderful support from within the community. The Bonner County Human Rights Task Force was one of the first organizations to step up and support the North Idaho Crisis Services. Bonner Partners in Care Clinic has collaborated with NAMI as the fiduciary agent because they had experience in it, and it just it made sense to have that. We've received grants in past years. Cal has been wonderful in their support. So there's lots of local support within the community that has been brought in to help support the things that we work on.
I think that's all part of the process of destigmatizing things too, making it accessible for people to understand and then build that broad support.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Regarding the hotline, your calls, I know you're getting about 180 a year. Do you find there, I'm just wondering what's the proportion of folks that are individuals suffering from mental illness versus family members? Do you get some of each?
We get a wide array of calls. Probably the highest percentage is interpersonal conflict. So for whatever reason, struggling with a situation within the family, whether it's poverty, whether it's a mental illness, having somebody that you can call at 2 o'clock in the morning and bounce ideas off, who knows resources, can help assess whether maybe this individual is experiencing symptoms of depression. Those types of things has been very supportive to people.
Yeah. And what's your goal with a call like that? Is it to get someone to come on in or get them some resources? What there must be a sort of a, must have sort of a, it's probably a hundred items long of things you're hoping to help
A lot of different. It depends on the call. Okay. So if someone is really struggling, the encouragement to maybe go and see a counselor. We keep a list of counselors that operate in the county, trying to find if the person has no insurance, then we look for maybe a counselor that can see them pro bono, which we do have a lot of counselors that will take a pro bono client. Linking them up with medications, where to go. Lots of people have no idea where to even start with that. They don't have a primary care physician. We have a tremendous number of people in our county that have never established a relationship with a physician. So it's linking them up. And again, that's the collaboration with Bonner Partners in Care. They have the physicians that come in and they can handle some level of medication. Hooking them up on how do you apply for Medicaid, what that process looks like. It can be pretty overwhelming if you're in a family crisis. There's lots of stuff going on, and now you've got to try and sort through all the paperwork necessary for the government.
So what are the best sources? If someone's listening and they recognize there may be a friend or a family member in need, but it's not a moment of crisis, should they call the crisis line anyway to get information on resources?
Or absolutely. Mm-hmm. Our hours are 5 p.m. to 8 a.m. Monday through Friday, and then 24 hours on Saturday, Sunday, and all holidays. Okay. If they just, it was not a crisis and they wanted to call and get more information, there is, you can leave a message and then I would be the one to call you back and kind of give you a list of the available resources within our county as well as further out, because you have to go further out lots of times.
Sure. And if it's, what if it's during regular business hours and it's, as you say, a person who doesn't have a regular physician or regular connection to mental health, is there another number they might consider, or are you at,
well, we do have the suicide hotline in Idaho, which handles all levels of crisis. That has been in existence since 2006. No, longer than that. Okay. 2012, I believe.
Is it statewide?
It is statewide.
Okay.
And it operates based out of Boise, and they are 24/7. And yes, I am frantically looking for the number because my mind has just stopped working.
That's all right.
That's all right. Take your time. If you're just tuning in, this is 88.5 KRFY Pondere, listener-supported radio for North Idaho. And this morning on The Morning Show, we're talking with Ellie Lazat, president of NAMI, National Alliance on Mental Illness Far North, and Catherine Peruse, who's the treasurer of the organization. I think we're going to take a short music break. We'll come back. We'll have some more information on Crisis Hotline and other services, the Suicide Prevention Hotline. But for now, we're going to listen to just a little bit of Queen. Queen and David Bowie, Under Pressure.
Are you feeling under pressure, Phil?
I always do, coming off the break.
That's right. What's next? Yeah. Oh, but the next thing is good, because we're still here with NAMI, with our guests, Ellie Lazat and... and I'm so sorry,
Catherine Peruse.
Your last name kind of gets me, and I've misspelled it, so that's a double whammy. But they're joining us here from NAMI Far North, an organization for helping folks with mental illness here in our area, in the rural areas. And we've been discussing, well, all elements of their organization, including their programs, but most recently talking about their hotline. And as we understand, the hotline is... really needing funding. It's an important, very important for the community and needs funds to run. So tell us a little bit more about what you're needing.
Money.
Right.
Our clinicians, because they are licensed clinicians within the state of Idaho, are all paid. They are paid minimum wage for the shifts that they work. And that does come up with a budget. Our only other expense is for the phone system. It's the phone lines itself, which is $100. So we don't have an office we pay for. We don't have it's the back of my car is where the office is.
So it really sounds like a great bargain for the community.
But it really is. And that was one thing I wanted, was trained clinicians, because it is a small endeavor and there's not... support. And a lot of big hotlines, you know, like the state hotline, they can have volunteers, but they always have a clinical person there as backup. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have the ability to do something of that size. And that's not really kind of the model that we need. Mm-hmm. So we went with just licensed clinicians. They're social workers, counselors, that type of thing.
So what to, in an ideal world, what's your vision for the crisis hotline? Are you looking to expand the service?
Or in my ideal world for our county, it's beautiful. We would have a nice small little facility with a couple of beds where people could come and take a break, get linked directly up with services if they were in a crisis. They have such a facility in Hamilton, Montana, but it is state funded. We don't have that kind of support here, but that's always been my dream to have a little crisis house.
So what are the steps to get there?
Oh, lots and lots and lots of money.
Sure.
Would be the steps. We're going to expand the hotline to 24/7. And we were hoping to do it with, we needed to do it with volunteers during the work week. And we struggled to get enough volunteers that were able to work it. At this point, we've not been able to do that. If you call the crisis line, you do get an answering machine. I get a text within like 30 seconds, and you can get a call back. But it is not a crisis type of setup during the workday. After hours, it goes directly to a licensed clinician. And if for some reason that clinician is on another call, then it's forwarded to the backup clinician, which is me.
Mm-hmm. Right. But it's a big endeavor, isn't it, to have a fully staffed crisis line and to think about a place for folks to come to if they're in the midst of a crisis. And yeah, it would be so important for this community. I'm assuming now if something like a serious mental illness crisis is happening, it's 911 call and then off to the hospital.
To the hospital. We do have the North Idaho Crisis Center, which is a state-funded agency where you can go and you can stay for 23 hours and 59 minutes. That keeps it from having to be licensed as a 24-hour facility. It is located in Coeur d'Alene. They have beds. They're right there on the campus at Kootenai Health, and they can link up with the ER. But it's a long ways away. Mm-hmm. So if you're in Boundary County or Bonner County or up Rapid Lightning, you're talking a 60-65 mile out trip for maybe a day or two, and then trying to get back home.
Sure. Yeah. So there are quite a few challenges for rural communities, of course, and we certainly have them here, but we're lucky to have you all. And I guess message would be for those who care, which I hope is all of us, funding would make a big difference in keeping people healthy.
Our website has a donate. So our website is NorthIdahoCrisisServices.org and as well as .com. And we do have a donate button there. And the number for the crisis line is 208-946-5595.
Okay, that's for the crisis line. Repeat that number one more time.
208-946-5595. And that is for North Idaho Crisis Services up here in Bonner County.
And you were also, before the break, we were looking for a number for the
It was the 24-hour Idaho Suicide Prevention Hotline, and that is 24/7. It is based out of Boise, which they work very hard to be aware of resources. And that number is 208-398-4357.
Very good. And one more way folks could help would be to come to the Farm to Table event.
Yes, so definitely.
Let's review that one more time for listeners.
And we also, Justine Murray, who is the owner of Le Chic Boutique, and Judy, don't know her last name, that is the owner of Tango Cafe. They got together and they have asked Greasy Fingers Bike and Repairs to donate a bike to raffle off. And also Finn and McDonald also donated a picnic basket to go with the bike. And that is... going on through Justine. She is a great supporter and advocate of NAMI, and she is personally involved also. I just talked to her the other day, and she said a lot of people, because the bike's there and it has our name on it and the fundraiser that's going to be going on, they come out and share their personal connection with mental illness, and that's it's awesome that that's going on. So the raffle, go to Le Chic Boutique or Tango Cafe, and they have tickets on sale, $5 a piece or 5 for $20.
All right, so not only a delicious meal, but some opportunities for some great prizes. A bike is great.
Yeah. It's great to see the community support for something like that.
That's right. I have a question. And what if you're a person who wants to help out with NAMI, but you're not a clinical professional? Are there other volunteer needs?
Always. We are always looking for board members, for people to help run the program, like our fair booth, manning our fair booth. Helping to put together this dinner, ideas for advertising, for graphic design, for our web page, planning walks, picnics. There's always something. And so you don't have to be clinical to be involved with North Idaho Crisis or with NAMI. Mm-hmm.
All right. Do we have to be mentally healthy?
No, because that's all a spectrum, okay? You know, some weeks I'm more mentally healthy than other weeks.
I think the nonprofit world attracts a wide array of people.
So true. And I mean, I'm saying that as a joke, but it does lead to a question that came up during break. You know, so many stigmas about mental health and mental health jokes, and I know you teach on that subject, but it's a fine line, isn't it? Because it is, as you say, it is a spectrum, and we just all have to be cognizant, don't we? And how a bit of advice on how to best do that, how to best handle that in our everyday.
Just be aware and think about the things that we take for granted. There's been quite a battle in the state about the license plate emblem down at Orofino.
Oh, yes.
Which, right. Where the mascot is, they're the lunatics.
Maniacs.
The maniacs, that's it.
Yes.
And I mean, and how difficult for the families that have to go and visit their loved ones at the state hospital to see that, mm-hmm. because it is not depicted in a pleasant way. And those types of jokes and things have been around for years, but it's all of us being aware and making an effort to be conscious of the things that we say and how it could be hurtful to others.
Mm-hmm. That's good advice for everyone with all kinds of health.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. So we're drawing a little short of time. Are there any particular success stories or pieces of information you want to share before we go?
Oh, we have lots of success stories. Mm-hmm. They range from helping an elderly lady get her water squared away because she got like a 250,000 gallon bill. And it was just more than she could cope with. All the different.
That would drive me nuts.
Well, it would. I mean, and it took some phone calls, but we were able to get everybody to work together and help her. And the situation was solved in a couple of days. To individuals who feel suicidal on the phone. And by the time they've talked to someone, that mindset has left and they're in a much better place. And we're able to help engage them with other support services, such as a counselor or those types of things. I've had numerous people say, I don't know what I would have done if I hadn't had you to talk to today or tonight.
Mm-hmm. True. I'm coming late to the game with this question, but I've got to ask it now that I've thought of it. Pets, do they make a difference?
Oh, absolutely. Mm. Lots of people have pets. Mm-hmm. And it's very supportive. It can be very supportive.
Mm-hmm. Seems so. I mean, they seem calming for every sort of person when something's going on. Petting your cat or dog seems to be pretty calming.
No, it is. And that's why there's support animals and emotional support animals to help. They're used quite heavily in PTSD recovery. Mm-hmm. But in a lot of other ways too, you know, fully service dogs that actually perform tasks.
Yeah, even without being the service animals, just the connections we have to those in our lives, it helps.
Right.
That connection. If there was a bit of information you wanted to make sure that the listeners knew about the general topic before we go, what would it be?
The crisis line number, 208-946-5595. And then to remember that there's always hope. No matter what, there's always hope. Mm-hmm. Even when you can't see it where you can't see a reason, there is always hope.
Well, a great message to end on.
Yeah, that's a good note to end on. And if you're just tuning in, we record for podcast all of our shows. And this morning we've been talking on the Tuesday morning show with Ellie Lazat, president of the National Alliance on Mental Illness Far North, the NAMI chapter here locally, and Catherine Perus, the treasurer of the organization. And all things crisis hotline number one more time.
208-946-5595.
Okay. And sign up for that dinner.
Yeah. And there's always, always hope. So thank you, folks, for coming in today. And we're going to go play a little Bob Dylan.